I'm Steve Potter, and this is Cityscape.
Actor Hal Holbrook will be appearing Saturday night at the Two Hill Performing Arts Center in his iconic Mark Twain Tonight. The event will benefit the Eugene Fieldhouse and St. Louis Toy Museum in downtown St. Louis. Hal Holbrook, welcome to Cityscape.
Thank you. When did I play St. Louis?
I think you were here a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Right. In fact, I first met you, it was about 2.5 years ago. You were in Hannibal. They were honoring you there, and you did a performance in Hannibal, and I had dinner with you and some other people. And I did a live Q&A in front of an audience with you and had a wonderful time.
You know, yes, you did.
Yeah. Thinking about that, you know, seeing you perform Mark Twain in Hannibal in the place where Mark Twain, Samuel Clemens, grew up was really special to me. Was it special to you in any way?
Yes, it was. It is special. The only thing that bothers me a little bit about, you know, the Hannibal connection is that people stopped there. They take Mark Twain and put him in the cave and the Tom Sawyer time and all that, the fishing pole, and they stop there. They don't really know anything about Mark Twain as an adult. They don't know the fact that Mark Twain was a major social critic of what was going on in our country over 100 years ago and, frankly, which is being repeated. The only thing that bothers me about some celebrations is that people stop at the river. They don't understand who Mark Twain was. They don't understand that in his later life, people who couldn't take his criticism of what we were doing as a people.
Was he unpopular with some people at the time?
They called him cynical. If he said anything that you didn't agree with, you were cynical. I mean, if he questioned the behavior of religious people who were doing things that Jesus Christ would be ashamed of, he was cynical.
Well, you've been performing Mark Twain, what, for over 60 years now, I guess. I'm assuming that you read Mark Twain as a kid like everyone did.
No, I didn't. I didn't know anything about him as a kid.
Oh, really?
I was raised by my grandfather. My mother and father just disappeared into the wild blue yonder. My grandfather was a very stern, a very wonderful man. He was our champion, my sisters and I. But he must have given me the Rover Boys, The Will to Win, Do or Dare. These are the titles of those books. They were boys' books. And the whole focus of them was to struggle over odds and conquer them. And that was what I was brought up on.
I see. But you didn't read the books as a kid. You started performing as Mark Twain later in life then. What about his words spoke to you? What attracted you to Mark Twain?
Well, to begin with, when I first read Tom Sawyer, which I didn't do until I was an adult looking for material, I was surprised at how good it made me feel. I mean, about 3 days, I was having a tough time in New York as a young actor with a baby that had just been born and moved to New York. My first wife was not in good shape, and we were in trouble. We had $200 in the bank and nobody to help, nothing. And anyway, I got the idea from somebody to go and do Twain as a solo, and out of total desperation, I went to a bookstore and I came home with Tom Sawyer, and about 3 pages in, I began to feel better. I didn't feel so bad anymore. That's the first thing I remember. But where I really got connected with Twain was a year or two later when I came across a book in the bookstore called Mark Twain, Social Critic by Philip Foner, a professor at NYU. I thought, what is this Mark Twain, Social Critic? What is this? What are they talking about? He just talks about a cave and Tom Sawyer and all fooling around as a kid. He's a social critic? So I started reading this book and I was amazed. I mean, he and Teddy Roosevelt were two people, major voices in the 1880, 1890, 1900 period in our country that really deserve to be read. People who do not read the history of their country, who are not taught the history of their country, who don't know when they graduate from high school who Abraham Lincoln was and what he did. In fact, do not know the Dred Scott decision, what it was. They are not equipped to be American citizens in a democracy. Let me just read you what the Dred Scott decision said, because I'll bet you not one person in 20,000 out there has any idea what it said. Okay. This is what the Dred Scott decision said, and this is a quotation. I'm not making it up like a person on television. Quote, black people, whether enslaved or free, could not be American citizens and therefore had no standing to sue in federal court, and that the federal government had no power to regulate slavery in the federal territories acquired after the creation of the United States. Dred Scott, this is the Supreme Court talking, Dred Scott, an enslaved African-American man who had been taken by his owners to free states and territories, attempted to sue for his freedom. You got that? In a 7-2 decision written by Justice Roger P. Taney, the court denied Scott's request. For the second time in history, the Supreme Court overruled an act of Congress to be unconstitutional. The 14th Amendment to the Constitution amended that, and that was what the movie we did called Lincoln, which was done a couple of years ago.
Which you were in, and I know we talked about that a couple of years when I saw you, because that was just coming out. Let me go back a little bit, though, and I think your point's a good one. We could all use a history lesson. That's for sure. But you'd been doing this Mark Twain thing for a couple of years, I guess it was, when you caught Ed Sullivan's eye. Did that change everything for you?
No, it didn't change everything. It just was a terrific surprise, and it was a great help. It probably was a bigger help than I realized at the time. I didn't expect a whole lot from anything. All I did was work hard. I was working in a little tiny nightclub in the Village in New York, which sat 59 people when it was full, which was seldom. And one night, Ed Sullivan came in with an old friend of his and sat right in front of me. There was hardly anybody in the audience, and I did the show. And make a long story short, he put me on. It was an amazing thing that he would do such a thing. Nobody paid any attention to me. I was a nobody. I probably didn't realize the impact of that at the time.
I'm sure you never thought that you'd be doing Mark Twain for more than 60 years.
No, I didn't. But, you know, I'm cautious. I'm in a business that's very shaky. Mm-hmm. People get to be very confident sometimes in this business, maybe after they've had drugs or alcohol to support them. But anybody who thinks that they got it made, if they're an actor, is walking on slippery ice, because you can never know in this business when it's all over. And sooner or later, it's over. You go up if you're lucky, and you go up and you got up and you achieve and get to be well known. And when you get up there, there's only one way to go, down.
Well, you've been up there a long time.
Yes, I have, and I'm holding out. I'm 90 years old, and I'm holding out, hoping not to go down too fast.
You were married to the late actress Dixie Carter, and you were even, for people may remember, you were a recurring character on her program Designing Women for a couple of years.
Yeah.
I remember you telling me about that after the two of you were married, she was from Tennessee, and didn't you move or at least spent time at the family homestead?
The people in Tennessee, my family, Dixie's family, took me in, taught me a very great deal by just being who they were. As I mentioned, I never had a mother and father. They disappeared, and I found my father later, but that's a whole other story. I never saw my mother again. I realized a few years ago that I think I was about 20 years old before somebody hugged me.
Really?
Think about it.
That's amazing.
I was about 20 years old before I could ever remember anybody hugging me. Anybody. So that will give you an idea what this young boy had to do.
And her family were probably the opposite. They were huggers.
Her family, right? They would walk the last mile for you. if you were part of the family and you were in trouble, they would get on a plane and come and defend you with a gun if necessary. And they had guns. My father-in-law, Albert Carter, Cart we call him, he had a gun in his drawer at all times. And he was a very staunch Republican. The whole family had been Republican ever since they settled in Virginia and came through the gap to Tennessee. And also, they're very solid Christians, Republicans and lifelong Christians. Two things that I was not very sure of, okay? I was not in deep favor with the Republicans, especially at certain times. I did vote once in a while, but Christians, I was born with a question mark in my head. And when you're born with a question mark in your head, and you go to church, and you read the words in the hymn, and you walk outside on the street, and you watch the way people behave, you have to wonder, what is this? These people are calling themselves Christians. But, you know, the people in Tennessee, this family, they just embraced me. They were probably instructed by Dixie and her mother, my dear mother-in-law, a wonderful lady. They were very lovely and kind, but they were authorities. They instructed the family to treat me with love, even though I was obviously a communist.
They thought
and,
so, right?
And, yeah. And an irreligious person. And they did treat me that way. They never criticized me. They sat and listened to my show.
Well, you're a lucky man in many ways, and I think that's one of them. I want to remind our listeners that you will be performing Mark Twain tonight, Saturday night, 8 o'clock at the Two Hill. It's to benefit the Eugene Fieldhouse here in St. Louis. If you'd like ticket information, we'll have a link to the Two Hill box office if you go to stlpublicradio.org to the Cityscape page. Did Mark Twain talk about getting older? Was that something he talked about?
Oh, yeah. He talked about it a lot. Well, he constantly talked about how he was wavering between the pulpit and the penitentiary, for one thing. And he gave a speech on his 70th birthday. I gave a part of that on the Ed Sullivan Show. Yeah, but he gave advice how to get to be 70. It was all the wrong stuff. Didn't agree with anything. Lots of smoking and swearing.
One final question for you. If Mark Twain were alive today, what do you think he'd think about our politics today? He was quite outspoken in his day.
I think Mark Twain would be disgusted, utterly and totally disgusted, with how we have jerked our democracy around into some kind of a strange pretzel that will not work. You cannot treat democracy like an enemy. Democracy requires people to disagree with each other, make some kind of an adjustment, and keep walking in the same direction. But when we turn it into a conflict, democracy will die. And it's on its way right now out the door. And we better watch out.
Hal Holbrook, Mark Twain tonight. That's Saturday night at the Two Hill. Mr. Holbrook, it's great to see you again. And thank you so much for spending some time with us today.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thanks.
Live in a river town. It's pretty little. It's high on the sides and it sinks in the middle. If it rains too much, the river comes down. Fills up the low spots all over town. Get down, river, a river, get down. Won't you get down, river, a river, get down. Once again, you have messed up.